This is the Presentation Podcast, Season 7, Episode 167. Troy, Sandy, and Nolan have a conversation with David Blattner of the Creative Pro Network. We get a quick update on the upcoming online presentation design conference and then a very design-centric conversation about all design is creating an experience for a user. It is an amazing design conversation, so let's turn things over to our hosts.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, today we're going to have a fantastic conversation. We did get together to record it a little bit early to meet with our guest schedule, so that was fantastic. So I say, guys, we just jump over and say what's happening in the world of presentations. I know we have a few news items to talk about before we bring on David.
Why don't you start, Troy? Go ahead.
So I've got two new slide software solutions. There's just two new apps out there, and they're really cool. One is Gamma.app, so G-A-M-M-A.app, and the other one is called DropDeck.com. They're interesting. They're new tangents, new takes on presentation creation, on presentation, a little bit on delivery. For DropDeck, which I think is relatively similar to Gamma.app, the trend is the automation of presentation creation. I'm not saying this is a good trend at this point, but it's a transitional time, and it's interesting to start looking at these things. There's just some things that are interesting about design, like specifically, you know, does it create larger or smaller size of bullet points, and does it swap in different images based on the bullet points or whatever text is there? Anyways, I'll put links to them. Just kind of fun, interesting things in our space.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of on that note too, Troy. Generative AI, you know, which is the automation of creative creation, has taken the world by storm. And we talked about ChatGPT a couple weeks ago. We actually did an episode using ChatGPT. And did I say GPI before?
I meant GPT, which I can't remember what the heck it stands for at the moment. Generative.
Text something. Yes. Anyway, it's sort of an essay tool, essay generator. We've mentioned DALL-E, that's a text to art generator. And we've all heard about OpenAI, and there's tons more, including Stable Diffusion. But here's the glitch. People, creatives all over the world, writers, artists, programmers, and other creators are concerned that these AI systems are being targeting vast amounts of copyrighted work, and there's no consent, no credit, and no compensation. An example is these creative folks have filed a class action lawsuit against Stability AI, DeviantArt, and Midjourney for their use of Stable Diffusion, which is they're calling it a collage tool that remixes copyrighted works.
And yeah, this is an interesting area, and it's one that's gone. I mean, it's just a newer avenue for it, but there's always the thing of, you know, using things for inspiration. Where does the inspiration begin, and where does the need for recognition of the original artwork end as well? I mean, it's just and this is just basically accelerating it. And the vastness of it, just being able to pull in so many different elements now. It'll be curious to look back in 5 years.
Well, it's forming. My opinion is forming. You know, the creators should have the option of somehow being able to block the little feelers that are out there trying to grab their work. But anyway, Stability AI poked the wrong bear. They poked Getty. So I have a couple of articles. We'll post it in the show notes about the class action lawsuit and then Getty. Getty has joined the fray.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where the suits go. And because, I mean, it's new territory. That's basically what it is. You got, you know, it's just like, does the Fourth Amendment apply to email? Like at some point we had to deal with that, you know, and phones. So we're just adding more to sort of the legal world. I've got a couple of Microsoft and tech world notes. This happened a couple of weeks ago, but by the time this comes out, but Microsoft laid off 10,000 employees. Google the next day laid off 12,000. For Google, that's 6% of their workforce. So it's happening, you know, Netflix and Amazon and obviously Twitter. But yeah, you know, all the tech companies seem to be shedding. With regard to Microsoft, we obviously have a lot of friends over there. I haven't heard about any, and I honestly don't know if these layoffs are affecting the Office Services division or not at all. I haven't looked into it too much, but yep, so that's happening. But another Microsoft item is that they announced Microsoft Basic. Did you guys hear about this? This is a new Microsoft 365 plan, right?
It's really? No, I'm not familiar.
For pennies, I think. What is it?
Yes, $1.99 a month. or $20 a year. So this is really the bare bones. I mean, you could previously you could get a Microsoft 365 account for like 80 or 90 or 100 a year, which again, I think is nothing for what it is. But now they have this basic plan, which doesn't come with quite as much, although it does come with like a ton of like 100 gigs of cloud storage still. So like two bucks a month. And now you can still use Office Online completely for free, but if you want the desktop and you don't want to pay 80 a year, you can pay 20 a year. So it's like it's getting closer and closer to free Keynote and Google Suite, G Slide. Like I think it's going to be harder and harder to actually pay for presentation software.
And
I think
it's going to be harder and harder for us to help them. For example, the Reddit thread that I go into now and then, not regularly, but. You know, people saying, why doesn't this work? Why doesn't this work? Well, they forget to tell us that they're on a phone. They're on an iPad. Mm-hmm. Now they're on this.
Yeah, the mobile version versus desktop version.
Yeah.
While there is parity, it is not in parity. This has got to be an all online web services option.
This, the Microsoft Basic is for the desktop. So it's, as far as I understand, it doesn't limit the software capability at all. I think it may limit your number of installs or your number of users. It's designed for students and just individuals.
Yeah. Not sure. I'm actually now on the site. The option above Microsoft 365 Basic promises a more premium Office desktop experience for $6.99 a month. So $1.99 a month, I believe, is the online or the online apps. And $6.99 a month, which is still a great deal, offers the desktop experience. But I'm curious if that includes Outlook and Teams, because I know we wanted to, for a lot of our show computers, you know, we get licensed for them. We had to pay for the higher level one to keep Teams in there. We don't really need Outlook on those per se, but I'll have to dive more into this. This is, I mean, $1.99 a month is you're just going to pay $20 a year.
Yeah, this is. I'm reading the article too, and it does seem, trying to compare them, it's a little confusing.
Yeah, I don't see an exact comparison
chart. But there is a $1.99 a month option, and you can still get it for free if you use just the online version,
without the premium features and content. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, for this episode, which is going to be phenomenal, we recorded this a couple of weeks early, partially because I'm traveling and also because our guest is traveling as well. We literally, he was kind enough to join us right before literally heading to the airport after we ended our recording. So I'm going to turn it over to Nolan to kick this off.
Well, we have a returning guest today, a returning champion of sorts, a friend of the show, a personal friend, and certainly a friend to the presentation community.
Friend of the pod.
All creatures great and small, kind of thing. And that is David Blattner from Creative Pro Network. Welcome, David. David is... David's an author, trainer, Adobe guru, and producer of the annual Creative Pro Week and numerous online conferences and events throughout the year. And now the last time we welcomed David was episode 125, but we wanted to bring him back on to talk about the upcoming Design and PowerPoint online conference, which I'll be speaking at. That's just going to be in a couple weeks at this point, February 16th and 17th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we wanted to also have a chat about a really interesting design philosophy, which David is passionate and which I think is a really important and needed way of looking at presentation design. So I'm going to put it in the exact words that David uses, which is all design is creating an experience for a user. So we're going to get to that after we talk about the conference a little bit. But welcome aboard, Dave. It's great to have you on again. And how are things?
Great. It's really great to be back. Thank you so much for having me. And that's a very nice intro. I appreciate that. You're absolutely right. We are doing the Design and PowerPoint Summit in a couple weeks. This is the third time we've done this event, third annual event, I guess, at this point. And it's really a delight to be putting on an event for the presentation design community, and almost as importantly, for people who want to be part of the presentation design community and who don't quite know how to make that happen. So it's great.
Now, I mean, you've been doing conferences for decades at this point. I mean, and very Adobe centered. Are you still finding? I think initially a lot of your attendees were coming over from the Adobe world, right? More traditional print and digital designers. Mm-hmm. Are you still finding that that's the case, that's how most people are finding it? Or are you pulling people from sort of the presentation world proper, you know, if that's a thing?
It really is both. People who are coming from the perspective of, I already do presentation design, I'm using PowerPoint or Google Slides, Keynote, whatever. But the I would say the majority of people still are people from the professional design community who are using professional design tools and who are being asked to do presentation design, and they're throwing their hands up. They're looking around with that deer in the headlights look, like, oh no, don't make me use PowerPoint. And so there are folks who are very comfortable with Photoshop or InDesign, Illustrator, and so on, but really just feel like an elementary school kid in PowerPoint. Now, again, we do have a lot of professional designers coming from the PowerPoint perspective who are coming in and saying, okay, I know how to do PowerPoint. I know all the ins and outs of the tool there. But what I don't really know is how to take that to the next level and really bring it up from the design perspective. And so we're trying to bring those two worlds together, the PowerPoint, and that's why we call it the Design and PowerPoint Summit. How do we bring these two worlds together to create amazing presentation experiences? There's the word that we'll be talking about later.
Definitely.
You make a great point, though. I just got a gig because the designer a company had been working with for years was done using InDesign. I mean, they didn't want InDesign PDF presentations anymore. Right. So, I mean, I feel bad, but I've got a new annual contract, so I'm kind of excited about it.
Absolutely, that's perfect. And one of the issues, of course, is oftentimes a lot of companies have their content in InDesign or sometimes PowerPoint, sometimes Illustrator or Photoshop. But how are you going to get that content into PowerPoint and for these presentations?
Ooh,
and that's one of the things we often talk about as well.
If only somebody would write an article on how to go from InDesign to PowerPoint. That's on my to-do list. I'm going to be doing that in the next couple months for Creative Pro magazine.
I love that. You know, Nolan, you've written some amazing things for Creative Pro and presented some amazing stuff. I'm so glad you're going to be back at the Design and PowerPoint Summit this year. But I just want to put a shout out for the content that you've written, because it's mostly free. Some of it you have to be a member to read, but a lot of it is just free content, which is hopefully you can get a link in the notes there.
Oh, yeah.
To go look at your articles, because that's really great, helpful stuff that is, again, bringing more and more people into the world of feeling comfortable and mastering PowerPoint.
So thanks. So yeah, just go to creativepro.com and under the learned tab, you can pull down and go to presentation. And as David said, there are video tutorials and articles, not just by me, but by some other people, some people who will be speaking at the conference. And before we sort of go into our main topic, do you want to just give us like a highlight or two for you of who will be speaking, like a notable session? This is a 2-day online session. So
yeah, why don't we give the date? Because this is like 2 weeks out from the release date here. So Creative Pro Plus presentation is what dates, David?
So it's February 16th and 17th.
It's a Thursday and Friday.
Thursday and Friday. All day events, one track. It's all online, so it's easy. And if you're listening to this and it's like February 18th, you're like, oh, geez, I missed it. It's all recorded. We record all the sessions, all the Q&A, all of that's done. And so you can still sign up and register for it weeks, maybe months, I don't know, after doing the event. There is going to be a lot. We've got 12 amazing sessions. Some of the ones that I'm personally most excited about, Nolan's, of course, your session.
Of course.
Of course. Mike Parkins is going to be there. I'm excited about, you know, one of the things I'm really excited about is seeing Cass Taylor from Adobe talk about sort of creating these interactive adventures almost using presentation tools. That's going to be fascinating. But honestly, one of the things that I think is going to be most amazing is connecting with the Microsoft team itself. And this is a very rare opportunity to have a direct Q&A, ask me anything of, I think we've got four of the top PowerPoint folks, including Sean Villaron and Kim Denny and some other folks who are going to be there. And they're going to present their perspective, their philosophy of what they're doing with PowerPoint, but they really are hungry. They've told us they're hungry to learn from the community. What do you want? What are you looking for? What can we answer? What can we make better? And so that's a rare opportunity that I'm really pleased that we're able to create a space for.
Yeah. If you want literally a direct connection and ask Microsoft something, this is it. They'll be there.
And,
and they really do listen. Do they always act? No, but they listen.
The easiest way to learn about the Design and PowerPoint Summit is to go to creativepro.com/events, or just click on the events tab, and it's right there. You can get all the information about how to sign up for that. Again, all online. It's going to be really terrific.
Creative Pro is a long-running conference arena, and presentations have been added fairly recently. Is this the second, third, fourth? What is this with a presentation specific addition to the Creative Pro world?
Yeah, so I think it was in 2018. I want to say,
oh my
when
goodness,
Creative Pro Week first started bringing in presentation design topics at our New Orleans event. I really appreciate you bringing up Creative Pro Week. Creative Pro Week is the annual event. This year, it's going to be in Phoenix, Arizona, June 5th through 9th. 5 days extravaganza of PowerPoint, Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, Acrobat, fonts, design, accessibility, all kinds of things in one place. And that's going to be an amazing event as well. This year, again, in Phoenix, also online. So last year was the first year we figured out how to live stream it. And so we'll be doing that again this year. That's quite the adventure, trying to put on a live event and live streaming, believe me. But yeah, the presentation design aspect of it started a few years ago. And it took off very quickly because, again, people are hungry. Nobody wants to stare at a piece of software and say, I don't even know where to begin. Or I know where to begin, but I just don't feel like I can get it. I can't figure out how to get what's in my head onto the screen, in this case, or the page. I consider everything a page. Even PowerPoint is a page. And so how do you get this out of your head? Nobody wants to feel like they're stymied in that. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do with Creative Pro Events is help people through that and give people the mastery so that they can feel confident in any of these tools.
That is fantastic. So this is a good transition into our topic for today, to conversation, which is all design is creating an experience for a user. Because I think presentation design, it's one of those types of design which, you know, it's unique. The designer or the creator is actively giving their designed product to and interacting with their audience in real time. So I, as a presentation designer, I create this, but the presenter presenting it, they're going to obviously, well, not obviously, they oftentimes make their own modifications, then they take it and it builds on a life of its own, and then they interact directly with their audience. I mean, it's a real-time event. Mm-hmm. Of course, we just had the whole conversation that you can see things recorded, and that's kind of a whole nother venue. So presentations have actually taken on even a longer life now with things mm-hmm. being available online. But David, you have experience in so many different worlds of design, from print, which we've had many conversations about because mm-hmm. that's a similar background, to digital and now to presentation. And then there's motion graphics and everything else. Tell us a bit more about, you know, this approach you seem to always have in mind and how it plays out and, well, how it should play out across these different disciplines for designers.
Well, I first heard this from James Fritz. Some of you may know James Fritz, who came out of the InDesign world, ended up working at LinkedIn Learning, and where I do a lot of training at LinkedIn Learning as well. And James came and spoke at one of our Creative Pro events, and he stood on stage and he said, "Look, everything is UX," and I was like, "Wait, what? What did he just say?" And he said, "This is all UX, UX, UI." And I said, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no, UX, UI is that's a very clearly defined thing out there. There are people who do UX work, user experience work, it having to do with apps. And he really helped me understand, sort of stretch my brain out. So this is not my idea originally, but he really helped me stretch my brain out to think, wait a minute, it doesn't matter if you're creating an app or a presentation, or a billboard, or a brochure, or a business card. It's all creating an experience. You are building an experience for your audience to experience. Right? You're creating this experience to invite somebody in, and that experience involves manipulating their senses in order to create a feeling. And I think it's to create a feeling and also to communicate an idea, right? Whatever you're doing, you're creating an idea. And the way we're creating, we're passing off an idea, expressing an idea, is through building this experience. And that experience is going to include fonts. What fonts are you using? That changes the experience. What colors are you using? Is there animation? Is there music? I mean, it's a lot of different things go into creating this experience. If you don't think about what the experience the audience is having, then you can't really design properly. And I think this is an important point, because a lot of people just say, "Oh, I'm going to design this." And they forget that the point of the design is that moment of experience.
I love that you use the word manipulated. I can't say, but because I use that exact word when I'm doing my data training, because I started off by giving people what I call graphic design education in a box, and it's all a movie poster, a very famous movie poster from a very famous movie, and it is just so well designed, and I take people through it, how the designer manipulates, and I always say in a positive way, manipulates the eye gaze of where people should look, in what order, in terms of what's most important of selling this movie, to tell the story of this movie. And I take them through it and I say, "You looked here because of this. You looked here because of that color. You looked here next because of the way it was positioned." And that's a positive manipulation. And it's totally, you have to have the audience in mind when you're doing that. You have to know, it's especially hard in print, because you just put it out there and hope that they read it in the order that, you know, you want them to.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that example. I think it was Jerry Seinfeld who talked about this idea of that all comedy, stand-up comedy, is manipulation. It's all about manipulating the audience. And we know this from other sorts of forms of entertainment as well. Theater is about manipulating the audience. Magic is about creating a manipulation. And where are you drawing the eye? Where are you drawing the heart as well? What is happening in the experience of the audience to convey what you're trying to convey? What's the story that's being told? And so I think it's critical that people understand that these are the tools of manipulation. I like the way you put, in a good way.
Right. I loved that you said, draw the eye, the heart. I would add the brain, because there's some logic, you know, so that's part of it too.
Thank you. Yes, yep. Absolutely.
But, and the reason I say that is because there are companies out there who are a little smarter than others. I actually, one organization that I work with has an experienced design department. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's not just product design. It is communications design. It's all about the materials. And it's literally called experience communications. My title is, with internally for those people,
yeah,
experience design presentation consultant.
Love it.
Isn't it awesome? I mean, yes. They get it. They nailed it.
Sandy, without telling us too much, like what kind of company is it and what kind of work?
It's a healthcare company. Okay. It's the technology component of it. They're striving to have the best technology in the world in the healthcare environment is their lofty goal.
Wow. No,
I think so. You can kind of guess who it is, you know, by that kind of thing. Because mm-hmm. They're already the biggest in the world or the best in the world. Go ahead.
I want to keep going back to this idea of, I love that companies are starting to embrace that. I think companies, smart companies, understand that that goes beyond design to the whole user experience. What is the experience of the customer taking them through that customer journey? But a lot of companies will focus on the customer journey and they'll forget the design journey. And so that's what I want to keep coming back to. All design, whether it's the signage in the building or the presentation that the C-level execs are giving or sales brochures, whatever, all that design is building an experience for the customer or potential part of the community.
I keep coming back to those photos and you've seen a lot of them where somebody lays a concrete path like in a park or something.
Yeah.
But then there's a dirt path that goes a different way because clearly that's how people want to go, and they've killed the grass because they've gone off the concrete because they're trying to get to a certain place, and that was not. That was not thought of initially or not realized. So, and of course we've heard sometimes they don't pave it to begin with, and they find out where people are going and then they pave it after the fact. So that's, paying attention or not paying attention to the user experience in the world of design, architecture,
absolutely.
Landscaping.
Yeah. A big part of, I love that. It's a great example. And a big part of paying attention to where people are walking in the design world is looking at all the people who are out there. And what is their experience? How are they taking in what you're creating? And this leads to one of, I think, an incredibly important topic, which we probably don't have time to go into too much today, which is accessibility. The point is there are a lot of people out there who are experiencing, in quotes, a PowerPoint document or presentation who are not able to experience it the way you think that it's being experienced. Either they can't see it, or they can't hear it, or they can't manipulate, they can't step through it easily. There's a lot of, we make these assumptions about how our audience are going to be experiencing our design, and we need to rethink those experiences. We need to go back to that park and say, okay, no, really, where do our people need to get to? Where are those dirt paths that need to be that need to be paid attention to? And I think the accessible journey is one of those.
Well, I have a tangential topic on this, David. And this, I was just talking to another designer, and this is really interesting because closed captioning underneath a video is a primary accessibility tool, but mm-hmm. It is now almost a mandatory medium. So think when you're on social media, how many times are on your phone? It's a video, but you're around other people or an environment where you're not going to be hearing the audio. So you're actually just watching the video and reading the closed captioning. We're just having this discussion about how this accessibility or extended use has now become a standard design consideration, because you have to, if you're doing content or even your video framing, you're considering where those closed captionings are going to be overlaying, what content is going to be cut off. And it's changing the design philosophy. Same thing in slides. The reason we are having this conversation is for live streaming, an event where we're live streaming, and the slides were not designed by us, but they had a lot of content along the lower area that were being covered up by closed captioning, even to the point where a live stream player has an overlay that shows the play bar and stuff. And these are just considerations. To your point, all design is UI, UX. You have to consider the elements that will be impacting your design as well.
I, I remember having a conversation back in my agency days when video was like, oh, everything has to be video. Everything has to be video. And so some teams were making videos but we were having this conversation that this was really before closed captioning was everywhere and prevalent. I said, you've got to make these videos such that somebody in an office with the sound down can still get something from it. So you need title cards, you need, you know, lower thirds, you need, like, it can't just be all audio because that's not how everybody, me included, I'm not going to turn the volume up, you know, in an open office, you know, place to watch a video. But those things are changing. Those things always shift and change because now closed captioning is, you know, but as you pointed out, now you have to worry about putting content in the lower third because of that.
Exactly. It becomes a design element now. It's a great con. It's totally tangent here, but I think it just, you just brought it up and it totally applied.
Troy, I don't think it is a tangent. I think that should lead us specifically to presentation. Let's start talking about presentation and how everyone can put this into practice.
I don't know who said it, but you guys might know. Was it Nancy or Gar that presenting is an audience-focused sport? Have you heard of that? And it's one of my favorite quotes. I got to find out who it is.
But, I like that.
But as we said earlier, like if you're presenting, you have a real-time interaction with your audience. And so for me, when I begin a presentation with a client and I take them through, usually not always, but usually take them through the whole sort of creation of the presentation, I have a whole set of questions and things. And the first questions are, first, is this presentation informational or actionable? Now, in the business world, 99% of the time, it should be actionable. They should be doing something. But that's audience. The audience, I say, what action do you want the audience to take? Mm. And then, is it live or remote? That's what we have to ask these days, right? Or hybrid. So again, is my audience looking at it on a computer monitor or in a big, you know, ballroom? And then the big question is, who is your audience and what's in it for them?
Great.
Why are they there? What do they stand to gain? And all these questions are asked before we even talk about content, right? We're not there yet. They want to start saying, okay, I want to show this. And I said, no, let's back up. Like, we'll get to that because we can't design that content until we know who we're designing it for and what the point of this whole thing is.
I love that. That's exactly right. Yep. And what are you trying, what's the, once you have that, then you can start saying, okay, so what is the message? What's the story? And then how are we going to transmit that information so that people experience it in a way that's proper? We've all seen presentations where you're like, yeah, I don't think I didn't take that in the way they intended that to come in, you know.
And that's why it's important too to evaluate if you can. It depends on how large your audience is, but where is their head now? You know, is there anything I have to overcome? Because if I say if I'm in a room of doctors and I start talking about lawsuits, that might not fall very well. You know, where they are and then where you want them to be, where do you want their head to be when you're done with the whole story?
Well, can I actually chime in on that list, Nolan, that you had? We follow a very similar practice, but we also consider the environment. I guess the environment could become a very large UX. It's going to impact your design choices. Is this going to be a document you're going to hand off? Great. Mm-hmm. I can be a little bit denser. Is this going to be a stage presentation? A lot of our world. Is this going to be a fast-paced element? Is it going to be, you know, a learning instruction? You know, so we also want to consider a lot of the environment because it's going to impact not the message, but how we design the message so that it is seen by that audience in a way. You know, if we're on a large screen, like here's my favorite example, because it goes the opposite of what people would think. Everybody's concerned with type being too small. Like you got too much on the slide. Huge issue, huge consideration. Microsoft did not do the world a favor when they created their base outlines for slides. They became dense contents. But the opposite can be true. When you're standing on a stage and you have a 60 foot wide by 22 foot high LED wall behind you, amazing canvas to design for, by the way.
Wow.
But if you just put up one big word, you know, welcome, but it's suddenly like 18 foot high because, you know, you design on your monitor. It looks great in front of you. Yeah, right. It can look over daunting. I mean, it looks like it's going to fall over and just take out the person on the stage. You got to consider your environment when you're doing this. So suddenly on these presentations, we're using a lot smaller fonts than you would think. It's like, no. we're not going to go with a 90-point font on that. We're literally like 45 is our max, because that's just going to look like, one, it's the peripheral vision thing. You know, when you sit in front of your television, you're supposed to hold your hands out so you can see the edges of the television, so your eyes aren't moving left or right. Hey, yeah, consider the same thing. And the audience could also be off to the left. Anyways, so I'm fascinated by this conversation, because it's absolutely not what I was totally envisioning, but it absolutely connects with everything I'm also was thinking of.
That's great.
About text, when it comes to presentation, text might be, you know, one of the biggest issues that we deal with, too much of it. And I just had a conversation with a client 2 days ago. It's a longtime client, so I can be more frank with them. But they were presenting, you know, their big important thing to their president, their big planning, whatever. And they just sent me, you know, just eye charts and just documents. I said, you're presenting this live, right? She said, yeah. And I said, you understand the president will not read anything on that slide, right? And she was like, well, I mean, and but again, we have a conversation. I mean, we have a relationship that I can say that, but that's thinking about the audience. I said, in this situation, you have, what, a half hour with the president of the organization? She's not going to read all that paragraph of text. And are you going to send it in advance? No. Well, they're really not. So you've got to ask those hard questions, but you've got to always think about it in mind. And Troy, to your world, like, is it an audience of 50 or 5,000, right? I mean, that's, again, screen size and all sorts of things like that.
That's why I feel like in many ways this really does keep coming back to theater. I do feel, and most people listening here probably don't know that my background actually is in theater.
As is mine, David.
As is yours. And I think there's a reason for that, because the theatrical experience is all about building that moment of experience, that moment, the moment of connection. And one of the things that people learn in the theater is you spend weeks or months or years thinking and processing and creating, designing for a single moment to happen. And this moment when the person walks on stage, or this moment when, you know, the curtain comes down, whatever it is, and the audience may only experience that once. You're going to experience that over and over and over and over again, but you need to always go back to, what is that single moment? In that one moment, how much can be, what's my bandwidth? How much information can I get across? And how can I create that theatrical experience?
I'll just go with the fact that theatrics are everything. I mean, a presentation is, although I liked your statement, I haven't heard that, Nolan, is about it being an audience-focused sport. But yes, theater's there. I think Sandy and I are just staying quiet because, you know, we have an absolute theater background of enjoying it from the seat.
That's what we experience.
But even that is critical. If you've had the experience of being in the audience, you can use that in your design. You can use that saying, okay, I've been an audience member. I know what this is like. And you need to get into that place when you're designing too.
Oh, I use that all the time. And the fact that, listen, you are the master at this content. You own this message. You own it. But I am an expert at how an audience is going to perceive this visually. So let's take your content and let's do a design of it that will work for that audience, that whole user experience. See, and I'm tying it together.
And that goes to another expression that I love in presentation, which is the golden rule of presentation, which is present unto others as you would have presented unto you. So if you don't want to read a wall of bullet points, don't put a wall of bullet points on, right? So that's exactly, we've all been audience members.
Oh, that's so good.
That I think I first heard from Nancy.
Great.
What are some examples of how you adjust and design, sort of adjust your design and content for different audience experiences? Troy, you were, you know, giving lots of examples in sort of the large audience, you know, large format situation. But what would you do differently, Sandy and Troy, in different situations for different audiences?
I'd like to hear David's opinion of what he sees other designers, because you get the beauty of seeing and talking to lots of design and seeing, kind of like me, the long range of design. You know, here's where we've evolved. And I think it's, what do you think about that, Dave? Where do you say?
Again, it depends on the medium. It depends on the tools. It depends on everything you've just said. What is that experience going to look like? And most of my background comes from the print world, whether it's books or, or billboards or whatever. And I think that you just need to keep coming back to seeing yourself in that as that audience member and what that experience is going to be. So to me, it comes down to understanding the design. I want to use the word semiotics, but that's going to bug people. But understanding,
it's bugging me. I got to go look it up right now.
There we go. Understanding what meaning is being expressed through what message is being expressed through the various things you're using, and that sometimes is literally like a font. What font are you using? What color are you using? Colors express emotion. There's different cultural meanings based on your context. Same thing with words. What words are you using? Words are very context driven. So getting back down to those really core little pieces, the atoms almost, as it were, that you're putting together into these molecules, which then turn into these amazing designs. Really focusing on that level, I think, is incredibly powerful when you're trying to communicate something clearly.
Another example, you know, it's print versus keynote. Troy, you started some talking about that a little bit, but one example of how I might adjust the design and the content is keynotes can be manipulative, as Nolan mentioned. For example, you may want a really heavy emotional response at the end. We've brought people to tears when I helped an executive present to a group of in a diversity presentation. He actually was brought to tears as he was trying to finish the presentation. So manipulation in a very good way. We accomplished what we wanted to do. What are other things? You know, print, it's a Word doc or – oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just to follow up on what you're saying, just using imagery versus text, imagery is inherently
exactly.
emotional.
Great.
And then, of course, what kind of imagery? Like, so, you know, just putting an image on a screen is gonna pull the heartstrings,
yes.
right, in some way.
Yeah, typography has lots of design elements to it to create emotion as well when it's creatively or designed,
smarter,
not just
aerial
typed across a slide, although that could be an impact as well.
I totally agree, Sandy.
There's so much involved.
On the other end, you know, you've got a corporation who, you know, it's been very Caucasian forever and ever and ever. And is really starting to embrace diversity. And it's not just add a diverse person here. And it's not just adding a person of color. It's adding ages and color and abilities, accessibility type of situations. So that creates the experience that this company is not just run by two white guys anymore. You know, they really, really understand me at the end.
I just did another presentation for a product, and this company is owned by a very large consumer brand. And at one point they said, you know, we had a good mix of imagery, but they said, you know, and ultimately we will have to run this past, you know, the parent company just to make sure that we're, it's diverse enough basically for their audience. And
awesome.
I was like, makes total sense. And I haven't heard back. So I think we did okay.
Excellent.
And again, I just want to keep coming back to the sense of user experience. Part of the reason for doing that is not to manipulate people into believing that the company is somehow inclusive.
Right. Good point.
But to create a feeling for people who are in the audience who may not be who you are. If you're a white male or a Caucasian person sitting designing this, you have a sense of, well, this is how we want to break the golden rule. I don't want to be designing for how I want to take it in. I want to be designing for how they are going to, whoever they is, may want to take it in. And
absolutely.
So
the audience is what all design is about. I think that gets lost in design school a lot of times.
Yeah, and so that's why if I hear, oh, the audience is a bunch of engineers, okay, I don't want to put so much detail on the screen, but I know that's what the engineers, they're the worst, right? The engineers want a lot of, and if I'm designing for astronomers, right, or like I do sometimes, they need that detail. And it's like, okay, that's not me. I'm not the audience, to David's point. And so in this case, it is breaking that golden rule.
Yeah. You know, my dad once told me, you know, they say the golden rule, but you know, do not do unto others as you'd want them to do unto you, because that might not be their kind of thing. That might be that not they actually the way he said it, that might not be their fetish. So
hey, so let me redirect.
Gotta be careful,
let's keep us on track here. Yeah. what are some things, like, I'll say to all of us, what are some things you see in design and presentation that make it clear the user experience is not being created? Like what are some of the negatives in this realm that would be considerations?
So I've had a frustrating experience the last couple of months with a client that this is a very large international nonprofit, an NGO, and we were designing some internal decks and things, and at some point they said, oh, well, these all have to be accessible. I was like, well, we never talked about that. And then they brought in their comms department to sort of tell me what that means to them. And there's some technical things that were just completely, their template was not built accessible, but it was things like, well, we don't want to really use images because those can be misinterpreted. And we don't want to use a lot of color, so mostly black and white. And we, ooh, you know, nothing less than 20 point type. And, you know, just like, and I was, they were dumbing things down so much that they, for their accessible audiences or maybe their screen readership audiences, that they were forgetting about the majority, the average person, in which visuals and color actually help, right? Actually help to make it emotional and
they had a checklist that they had to adhere to.
And mm-hmm. so they were, but I, the decisions were just being made incorrectly. Like, because you can't forget about 99% of your audience, you know, in favor of 1%. It's a balancing act, right? You want to bring, you know, the let's say the 1% or whatever it might be. You want to bring everybody into the sort of same plane, but you don't want to limit things, I think. So that was just very frustrating for me.
It is a real challenge. That balancing act is a huge challenge for companies, especially because a lot of companies are being told by their legal department, we have to do this.
Oh.
You have to dumb this down to check off everything on this
you
list.
You're reading my mind.
Check box and nobody cares how it's accomplished. Yeah,
that's
we're
right.
It's experiencing that.
It is a hard problem. So we're in a funny transition right now, I think, mm-hmm. in the design community, trying to figure out what this accessibility means. But that's, again, I want to generalize out to this is always a problem where because you can start trying to communicate to one audience and it doesn't work for another audience. And we see this all the time in design. What you may design something that works in North America that really is not going to work in South America. And so how do you balance all of those needs?
So David, you're like teeing me up here perfectly, because what I was thinking of when I asked this question is, you know, what user experience is not being created, and the multiple audience thing, but maybe a little more, more specific to presentation is, you know, a quick capture slide design, you know, something the audience can absorb and get the key elements out of so they can focus on the presenter. That's amazing and always needed. Something that's taken years and years for people to kind of embrace. But the takeaway, the PDF of the slides. So we have this amazing keynote presentation. Keynote, the person standing giving the address, not the application. You know, we have this person do it, and there's just big visuals everywhere, keywords everywhere. But if they just make a PDF of it, there's not enough content there for the audience to associate the messaging. You know, it was delivered by a person that was, you know, supplementing it, or really the slide supplemented their thing. So, you know, on that whole user experience, it's where the audience is. At that point, you need to consider, as you were just saying, there are two audiences here. There's one that's being the delivered presentation, and then there's another one of, it's a standalone document. I need to add content to make that context work. So yeah, you've got to constantly think about this experience and where people are experiencing it. It's just a, okay, this is getting really philosophical, but I really love it.
That's a good point, though. You added the where they're experiencing it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Context. It's always context. Cultural, geographic, everything. It's all context.
Well, Sandy. Well, David, I know you're on a timeline. Sandy, yeah. Maybe you can give us something to wrap up with so we don't overstep our timing here.
David, what is your best advice to designers for creating a user experience? And what can presentation designers learn from other design principles?
You know, the key word ultimately is empathy. And that sense of saying, okay, what I need to put myself in somebody else's head or somebody else's heart or culture or whatever it is, that's increasing empathy is always going to help with design. It can be frustrating. It won't necessarily feel like it's helping, but in the end, it will.
Excellent.
All right. Well, that is a really good place to end. And it took us, we ended with the word empathy, which is
huge.
Really what the whole thing is probably about. Well, thank you so much, David. So the next event, the PowerPoint plus, the Design and PowerPoint Summit.
Yes.
That's going to be February 16th and 17th. We will put the code in the show notes for that if you want to sign up for it. And again, you know, just check out creativepro.com. There's a whole presentation section. There's a ton there. They're always doing stuff, always putting stuff out. And this was an awesome conversation. I really, really enjoy just chatting about this.
It was really cool.
Me too. Thank you again so much for having me on. This is brilliant. I really love what you guys are doing and getting this good information out into the world.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Thanks for coming aboard again. All right. So my tech tip is the SanDisk SSD external drive. They have these in like one gig or 1 terabyte, 2 terabytes, 3 and 4. I just got a bunch of 4 terabytes. These are tiny, tiny little SSD drives at an amazing price point for an SSD drive. And I've been using them. I've switched over from my old, you know, big hunking powered G drives with the spinning platters and everything. These are so small, they're great. And I love, I put Lightroom on one of them so I can go back and forth between, you know, computers, just plugging and unplugging. It's USB-C, super fast. I love these things. These are really great. So I'm very impressed with them. SanDisk, they're called Extreme Portable SSDs. And just to give you a sense, like I got a 4 terabyte SSD in my Mac Studio, and I think I paid something like ridiculous, like $1,500 or $1,600. On Amazon right now, you can get a 4 terabytes for like $350.
Wow, so that's insane.
It is insane. But they work great and they're super, super fast. So very impressed with them. Just don't lose them. They're almost getting too small. Like you don't want to misplace them.
Okay, this is so funny because I'm going to talk about hard drives as well, folks. We don't pre-plan this actually, but my note is actually so I'm going old school compared to Nolan. I am so excited about these new drives. Now these are for our they go into our server, our on-premise server, and they also are our external backups. So we copy everything. All the core files go to external backups and those get rotated out as part of the backup scenario. So Nolan, mine's actually the exact opposite. These are spinning platter hard drives. They're the bigger 3.5-inch drives. They are slow, but they're enterprise level. They're black edition, but they're 16 terabytes per drive. So in our server, as example, we're swapping out what are 4 and 6 terabyte drives and dropping in these 16 terabyte drives. It takes about a day for the data to replicate across, but they fill the same area. And then we have them in these external. So it's really funny. We actually have 4 of them in external enclosures. So those become the offsite backups of all the compressed data. So yeah, we have these 16 and the price point's still amazing. You know, they're like $400, $500 a drive where we were spending that much for like literally half of that. So, okay. So now that we've gone super high tech and small and fast, and now we've gone to super big and crazy big and slow and old school. That is so funny. Sandy, what do you got for us? Well,
I'm switching gears, and this is something I've mentioned before, but a good year and a half ago, I purchased a Remarkable tablet, and it's an electronic tablet that they claim to be the only tablet that feels like paper. And really, it does. And so I just want to, here it is a year and a half later, I haven't put it in a drawer. I still use it for every single minute to take notes. Mm. I can organize my folders, kind of like OneNote, all of that. But it's better than OneNote if you need that tactile approach to note taking. So I really, really enjoy it. And here's the clincher. I know I paid more than $279 for it. So it's, I think, a very reasonable price right now to get the newest version of this tablet. Check it out.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. If you have a virtual or hybrid event that needs a place for the attendees to experience that event or a registration system for those attendees, check out vxpmeeting.com and also the blog, the PowerPoint blog.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out nolanhamescreative.com to learn more about our trainings. You can also find some free downloads at the goodies page. And if you want to design slides without bullet points, you got to check out thebetterdeckdeck.com. You can get the actual deck, PDF versions, even the PowerPoint source files. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get a discount off of any order.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWiz. And don't forget to check out the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org.
This is David Blattner from Creative Pro Network, and you can find us at creativepro.com. Our events are creativepro.com/events. I hope we see you at the Design and PowerPoint Summit, February 16th and 17th, online, or at Creative Pro Week in Phoenix, Arizona, June 5th through 9th this year, or online as well, live stream. So check it out. Hope to see you there. Thanks so much.
And that concludes another fantastic design conversation. Thank you, Troy, Nolan, Sandy, and David for giving us part of your day. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.